Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast, sponsored by DECA, the opera label. My name is Jana Wichelow, and today I'm speaking with American countertenor Lawrence Zazzo, who is singing the role of Orfeo in the COC's production of Orfeo et Euridice this spring at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts here in Toronto. You can find more information about the production at our website, coc.ca. Lawrence has appeared in the world's finest opera houses and concert halls in a wide-ranging repertoire from Gluck's Orfeo to Thomas Adder's The Tempest. I could take the next half hour listing all of Lawrence's many appearances and projects, but you'd probably be best to visit his excellent website at lawrencezazzo.com. Welcome, Lawrence.
Nice to be here. Thank you, Jana.
Now, you made your COC debut as Oberon in Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream a couple of seasons ago. This was also the debut operatic role at the start of your career, is that right?
That's true. That's the first opera I ever did, yeah.
Can you tell us how the whole career got started?
I'll try. I suppose I could say I kind of fell into it. I've always sung, mostly in choirs. I discovered I had this kind of countertenor voice probably in high school after my voice changed and through singing in different choirs. And I did a lot of kind of a cappella kind of singing, jazz, kind of jazzy groups in university and also a barbershop, different kinds of choral singing groups, as a countertenor, also in a men and boys choir. And I really got the itch to go and sing in a proper Cambridge Anglican choir, a Cambridge College choir. So I went over to Cambridge for 2 years, sang in Clare College Choir there in King's College, and I really probably thought I would do choral conducting or a career in academia or, you know, perhaps a concert singer as a countertenor. And it was only my first year at the Royal College of Music, they happened to be doing Midsummer Night's Dream, and they needed a countertenor to sing Oberon in the opera school. I wasn't even in the opera school. And they asked me to do that. And they were also doing a Handel opera, because they do a Handel opera every year at the Royal College of Music. And they were doing a very obscure Handel opera, as if they aren't all obscure in a way, called Arminio. And I found myself my first year on this concert course at a conservatory doing two operas, doing the two leading roles. And I had done also a lot of children's kind of music theater when I was a kid.
So you'd done the acting?
I had kind of done the acting and the stage, and I was also, I always kind of bring this up and people laugh, I was a child magician.
I read about this. I wanted to ask
which
you.
People are always amused by. And I was called the Great Zazzini. And my mom was a real stage mom, I suppose, and she helped me develop my act. I suppose I was probably about 12 or 13, and I did birthday parties for much younger children.
Yeah.
And I had the top hat, and I had a rabbit, and I did all the tricks and the scarves and balls and things, and I had a whole patter. So I was kind of used to performing, mm-hmm. and I kind of left that in high school and was not interested in stage or theater or drama or music, you know, musicals at all. I was interested in pure kind of pure singing, you know, classical music. And I just suddenly found in my mid-20s here in London, stepping onto the stage for my first rehearsal, that it came rather naturally, and I had a kind of instinct as to what to do with the character and how to integrate that with the singing, and I realized I really loved it. It felt really natural, and voila, there I was with an opera career, and it kind of... I was very quickly got offers, and I was very quickly working at a pretty full pace in my kind of late 20s.
Now, as a countertenor, you have, of course, a lot of early music at your disposal, and you've made several of these great roles very much your own. Then in the Romantic period, there's little demand for countertenors. The last half century seems the countertenor voice has come back into its strength. Do you have any theory why?
Well, I think probably a lot of that has to do with the rediscovery of Baroque music, of course, and that is in opera particularly has to do with, I think, the calcification of the repertoires in the houses. I mean, I think people maybe simply got tired of seeing the same pieces over and over again, and also people weren't so thrilled with what composers were coming up with in terms of contemporary opera. And I think management started looking backwards, and conductors and some singers, Marilyn Horne and Joan Sutherland, started rediscovering the earlier bel canto repertoire, and not just Mozart, but they started going earlier, and of course we have Handel and then Monteverdi, mm-hmm. and realizing this incredible treasure trove of pieces. Now these pieces, of course, in the 18th century, many of them used castrati. So yeah. As a countertenor, to explain to your listeners, people who don't know, I use my falsetto. You can hear my speaking voice, but when I sing, I sing in my falsetto, so I sing very high, just like a falsettist, like Frankie Valli in pop music, mm-hmm, uses. Right. This is omnipresent in pop music, right? Yeah. Men singing very high. So I use this to kind of approximate the sound of a castrato, but of course we don't know what they actually sounded like. Mm-hmm. Well, we kind of have an idea. There's a recording from the early 20s, Moreschi.
Yeah.
He was the last one. It's rather hideous, but yeah. amusing for your listeners. If they want to kind of look it up, you can listen to it on YouTube.
Yes, right.
And it's very kind of squeaky, kind of very strange sound. But of course he was in his, I think he was in his early 70s when he made that recording, and he was just singing in the Sistine Chapel choir. So we have no idea what a full-flying castrato in the 18th century, a superstar, would have sounded like, but apparently it was incredible from contemporary accounts. So I'm not saying I sound anything like that, but I'm trying to dramatically and in some way vocally approximate what these extraordinary singers sounded like.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I do. So that's the vogue. I mean, I suppose there is a kind of a freak factor, isn't there, really? And I suppose people that will be coming along to Orfeo might still have never heard a countertenor live. Maybe they will have heard them on recording. There are lots of great countertenors. David Daniels originally did this production. He's one of my favorites. Rene Jacobs was a countertenor and is now a early music conductor. I'm also a big fan of his singing. And I think there's probably a moment when you listen to it and you think, oh, this is a little strange, this is a little odd. So I'm always caught between trying to say, we're just like everybody else. I'm an artist just like anyone else. It's a very natural function of the voice. And as a matter of fact, in some ways it's more natural than what Lawrence Brownlee does in the Cenerentola, which is singing unbelievably high in his full voice. I mean,
yeah.
that in a way is more freakish than what I do, because the natural mode for a male voice is when you go high, you change gears, you know, you go up into a higher gear and it's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm caught between that and also caught between saying, well, actually, maybe it's good to use that kind of freakish, that otherworldly sound to kind of transport the audience into somewhere else. And that's very much what Orfeo the opera is about, going into another world. And maybe that's what opera is about, going and escaping into another world, a fantasy world where kind of the normal rules don't apply.
Yeah.
So I'm always caught between those two, justifying it and making countertenors like every other singer, but then also saying, but actually, we're a little bit different, and maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Every guy's and special at the same time.
Correct.
Now, what about the different contemporary composers who are creating roles for countertenors? Do you have any particular favorites of those roles that you've done? And
yeah, at the moment, I did Jonathan Dove is a British composer, and he wrote an opera called Flight, which I think is just wonderful. And the role is the refugee. It's set in an airport, and it's just an incredibly dramatic role. And one I really enjoyed. It's very lyrical, it's very touching, it's very human, and I'm a big fan of his work. The other great contemporary piece, which I think will become a modern classic, it's a masterpiece, is called Tri Siestri. It's Three Sisters by a Hungarian composer called Peter Ötvös, who was a pupil of Ligeti. And it's the story of three sisters, the Chekhov play. But all of the characters are men, so it has four countertenor roles in it. So
are the characters men, or just men playing the three sisters?
Well, yes, it's men playing the three sisters. Yeah. So the three sisters are countertenors, men singing the roles of the women. So I played Masha, which is again an incredible dramatic role and very, very touching. And I suppose that's probably, you know, that's about 10 years old now. That's kind of the countertenor piece par excellence, other than, of course, the Britten Midsummer Night's Dream, which is the great role in the repertory for a countertenor. I mean, it's really the only role in the repertory written for a countertenor that's being performed. So I really enjoy doing that, and it's got a special place for me because it's the first thing I ever did, and it's just such a wonderful role.
It was wonderful to see you do it a couple of years ago. Have you done it in between those times?
I haven't actually. No, I've been doing. I haven't been doing very much contemporary music, which I rather miss. I've been doing a lot of Baroque music.
And you've been doing a lot of recording too.
I try to do one a year if I can. Yeah, sometimes I do more, sometimes I do less. But I always have a project in the back of my mind that I'm kind of working on, trying to plan.
Can you tell us about Birdland and then your latest one?
Yeah, Birdland. I'm always doing. It's kind of strange. Again, as a countertenor, as I was saying earlier, you know, a lot of what I sing wasn't really written for the voice. So when you're doing for my voice, it was either written for a castrato, or you're looking at the song repertoire in the 19th century. As you said, you pretty much have to skip it, or you have to very selectively dip into it. So I'm always looking to do things in a different way, and to maybe look at music to use the voice and maybe use instruments in a different way to approach maybe traditional music from a slightly different angle. Mm-hmm. So Birdland, for example, is the viol consort repertoire, which your listeners might not know of, but it's William Byrd and Orlando Gibbons and a little bit of Dowland. And this was very big in the late 16th century, early 17th. And I took this repertoire and discovered, looking at it, that basically it can be played note for note by saxophones. And there's kind of a melancholy, bittersweet, kind of almost jazzy flavor to this kind of music, which I think would suit saxophones very well. So I got together with the saxophone quartet and we experimented, and they're fantastic players. And within a couple of days, they were playing in what I would say is a very good early music style.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with this CD, and I'm very proud of it. And
it's a fun play on the word too, Birdland, B-Y-R-D.
Exactly. Right. I like puns as well, I have to say, bad or not. I think that's a rather good pun, I have to say, but there you go. And then this new CD, countertenors are often asked to do lute song recitals.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this repertoire from 16th, 17th century. Beautiful music, but perhaps maybe sometimes a bit monochromatic. You know, when you've heard a couple of lute songs, you've kind of maybe heard them all. You know, and there's lots of verses, and maybe it's more about the poetry. And I wanted to do something different. And of course, also, I really come, you know, I'm known for my opera, so I like to, even in a song recital or a concert, somehow structure it so it's somehow dramatic. So I had this idea, well, there's lots of mad songs. That was also a kind of topos from in the 17th century, particularly with Purcell in the Restoration. They had these mad songs. And there is this theme, and then there's the melancholy in Dowland. So this idea of madness, and then lots of kind of astrological imagery.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to love this Herbert Howells' Full Moon, this song, Schumann's Mondnacht, and I saw, okay, Mozart's Abendempfindung, which has been done with lute, and I saw, oh, here's a theme we can maybe, you know, this idea of lunacy, of course, the moon and madness have been linked since going back to ancient times, really classical times. And I came up with this lute song program of traditional lute songs, mad songs, and also songs that have somehow the moon mentioned in them or as a theme. And then also a couple contemporary cycles written, both of them, I think, in the 80s, one by Jeffrey Bergen called Lunar Beauty and one by Rory Boyle, using the lute and written for countertenor and lute. on these themes of the moon and madness. And so I mix, I try to, here again, I'm mixing modern and ancient, and maybe having people, a song like Schumann's Mondnacht, which everyone kind of knows on the piano and everyone knows, having being sung by a tenor or a baritone, having a countertenor sing this song and also on an ancient instrument, mm-hmm. that maybe it gets people to look at this repertoire in a different way. And not just that, not just, being an iconoclast for the sake of it, but also making some beautiful music. I hope it stands on its own feet. And I'm really proud of it. And there's some beautiful music in there, and it has a kind of flow to it that I'm... an aesthetic. And my lutenist Shizuko Noidi, who works, I met through working with René Jacobs, who's this wonderful, incredible Belgian conductor of Baroque music, and she plays often in the pit in the operas, mm-hmm. as part of the Continuo group. And she's a lutenist who's also very dramatic and brings out lots of colors in her instrument. And she did an incredible work creating basically transcriptions of this music.
Why don't we listen to something?
Why don't we listen to, shall we listen to the Abendempfindung, which is a Mozart song written originally probably for pianoforte, but it works beautifully on lute.
Lovely. So this is Laurence Zazo and Shizuku Noiri on lute.
Lebensbund war sie, und der Fall.